Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us and sharing part of your gorgeous, warm summer Saturday with us. Very grateful to you for that, as ever. Lots to do on the show today. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about this big Whole Foods sale to Amazon. Big bucks there. We're going to talk about that and break that all down. And we're going to also be looking at Kitchen Chicago, a shared commercial kitchen for small businesses right here in our own backyard. And speaking of local businesses, we're joined in studio right now by Abby Cheeseman, who is co-founder of Skill Scout, which is a really interesting business. Anytime we hear about a business that is really just trying to challenge the idea of doing something the way it's always been done, we're always in favor of that. So, Abby, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell us about Skill Scout. I don't want to have to say that three times fast. That's like a kind of a mouthful. But tell us what Skill Scout does.
So Skill Scout helps bring jobs and people's skills to life. And we believe that there's a better way to do that than traditional job postings and resumes. So we use video to create an experiential job post to show a behind-the-scenes picture of what a job is really like. And we engage candidates in hands-on work samples so that they're able to demonstrate a skill rather than submitting a resume for a position.
I really love that because so often job postings are so vague. They don't really, I mean, everyone just says something like motivated people person, which just means like, don't sleep at work and get along with your coworkers, please.
No drinking on the job.
No drinking on the job. Try to show up most of the time. I think that's all that means. And then in job interviews and on job resumes or work resumes, it's kind of the same stuff over and over. And I've heard people talk about, highlight your accomplishments rather than the duties you were hired to do. But even this seems like it takes it to kind of another level.
Yeah. I mean, we were really inspired on a project. My co-founder, Elena Valentine, and I were working on a project to more meaningfully connect young people to employment. And so in talking to 16 to 24-year-olds, one of the resounding commonalities was you cannot be what you cannot see. So if you live on the south or west side of Chicago and you've never been in a CNC shop or a welding shop before, you have no idea what that job looks like. And so we thought we can do better than this. And we just started with a camera kit filming these jobs and showing people what it was actually like to work there.
I love that. So it's not necessarily contingent. The employer doesn't have to make the video per se.
Right. Yeah, that's where Skill Scout comes in. So we work in a couple different ways. We have media teams all over the country that will come out and be deployed onto a work site to capture that job. And then we've just recently launched an app that allows companies to basically gather ingredients for a job video. We give them the recipe, they gather the clips, and then we sort of bake it all together in a produced piece that shows a 2 to 3 minute preview of that position.
Well, that's fun. It seems like fairly low drama for the employer.
Very easy. If you can film your cat or your kid, you can film your job.
Which we know you can because the internet is filled with those videos. Are there any industries that you don't get into, or does it pretty much cover everything?
It covers everything. We started off in manufacturing, partly because that industry has a lot of misperceptions about what it's like to work in the manufacturing industry. But now we've grown. We work in healthcare, hospitality, up to companies like Nike and Brinks Security.
How interesting. And so as you are putting all of this together, what was the thing way back at the beginning that made you want to build all of this?
Yeah. So I went to grad school for industrial organizational psychology. I got a job at a local consulting and innovation firm called Gravity Tank. And I was so inspired by the idea of being able to disrupt industries. And that's something that, as a good psychology student, you don't really think of. And so we started, Elena and I, doing these videos and thought, there's a better way to communicate jobs. And so as we started showing these videos to young people, they really became inspired to try and apply for things that they never would have considered had they not seen these videos. And so for us, it became a really good way to have social impact, but also make a valuable proposition to a business so that we could be sustainable.
So you described a little bit about the employer and how that experience is for them using your service, Skill Scout. What is that like for the person applying for the job?
Yeah, we want to be the YouTube for jobs. So if you come to our site, you will not see a whole bunch of bulleted lists. You will see behind the scenes videos of different workplaces and different jobs. And so in the same way that we bring jobs to life, we want to bring candidates to life. So we help them experience that job through a work sample. So if you're applying for a CNC position, you might be asked to read a blueprint rather than submitting a resume. And the reason for that is we go beyond that resume and have somebody actually show us what they can do versus just write about it. Resume is really a proxy for how well you can write about yourself.
It's true. And I think there's an interesting kind of social equalizing piece here too, because it's easy to name drop that you went, you know, to some prestigious school or that you worked at a very fancy firm or something like that. And I think that the resume is so often passcode information in that way, like, oh, I went to Harvard or I went here. When in fact, like, you can go anywhere you want, but you still got to show up and do the work everyone else does, which I think is, that's really interesting that you're doing this work sample way, because then it becomes kind of this equalizer.
That's right. And for a lot of our manufacturing clients, for example, they don't care if you learn how to work on a car in your uncle's garage or if you went to school for it. If the skill is there, they want you. And so the work samples are a good way to communicate that and have that transparency.
And how does that work sample go if it's something like, say, the example you just gave, working on a car? How would you do that over online?
So we might present some sort of video clip that the candidate watches and say, how would you tackle this problem? And they might be submitting, you know, they might be typing their answer. They might be submitting a video themselves. But they're really engaged in the work versus writing about what they've done in the past.
Sure. That is such an interesting idea. So everybody, let's go look at Skill Scout. So you said there's an app and the web component. So
yep.
Where would you like people to go and how can they connect with you on social media?
SkillScout.com is our website. We would love to have you visit. And then you can follow us on social media at Skill Scout. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram as at Skill Scout Jobs. And we would love to hear from you guys.
Great. And the app is for Android and iPhone?
It's not a native app. It's just a web-friendly mobile-friendly application.
Even better.
Yes.
So everyone can use it. Well, thank
exactly.
you so much for being with us. Abby Cheeseman, co-founder of Skill Scout. Everybody, we will tweet out those all the things she just mentioned so you can find how to find Skill Scout and use it for yourself. Thanks so much for being with us, Abby.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for sharing part of your weekend with us. Always grateful to you for that. Still lots to do on the program today. You know, our next guest, Greg Trotter, who's a business reporter covering the food industry at Chicago Tribune, is one of the very first people that I thought of this week when I heard about this Amazon Whole Foods deal, because I knew you would have so much to say about that, Greg. Right away, I looked at your Twitter because I thought, oh boy, this is a thing. He's going to be busy today. But we have so much to talk about because there's also, and I want to talk to you about that here in a second, especially
sure.
kind of the local part of that. But I also want to talk about recently you wrote about this really interesting company called Kitchen Chicago, which is helping. It's like a shared kitchen space, because it seems like that's such a large financial component to a food startup is finding that kitchen space. But here's a way that to kind of cut that cost is what it sounds like.
Yeah, no, I mean, I found out about Kitchen Chicago. I was actually doing a story about Farmer's Fridge, the business that they sell the salads out of the vending machines.
Oh, yeah.
So I was doing a story about their expansion, and that's where they got their start. And Luke Saunders, the Farmer's Fridge, sort of walked me through there and showed me the space. And I thought it was really interesting. I had never been in a shared kitchen myself, although they had been around. Like, the idea of the shared kitchen is not new. They've been around for a little while. It's sort of a phenomenon of the past 10 years or so. But what is new and what's interesting is that I found, you know, getting data from the city that since 2012, the number of businesses licensed to operate in shared kitchens has grown 75%. So from about 150 licenses to 265. So you're seeing this increase of, you know, and it's everything from catering businesses, food trucks, Whole Foods vendors, meal kit delivery services. As the local food movement continues to gain momentum, that, you know, this is one result of that. And the other interesting thing that I found really striking about this was that the majority of the 35 businesses or so that operate in Kitchen Chicago are women and minority-owned businesses that don't have tons of capital lying around to throw at a venture that, may or may not succeed. So I thought that was pretty neat.
That is really interesting. There's some part of industry that is that has some kind of diversity in that regard, for sure.
Yeah.
That is very interesting. And so how many I have heard of something like this before, but do you have a sense of how many facilities like this are in Chicago?
About six, only about six. And so, I think it's increased like about one per year since that they started offering the shared kitchen license in Chicago, which was, I think the first full year was 2012. So it's still like a really, there's only six of them, but the number of people using them is increasing a lot. In the grand kind of Chicago food ecosystem, this is still very tiny, but there's clearly increased demand for these kinds of spaces. And the most recent sort of aspect of this is the Whole Foods vendors. Particularly with the Inglewood Whole Foods, there was the company put a lot of focus there in having local vendors sell their products in the store. So you had a lot of people that are, in a Whole Foods for the first time. And then once they get in that first Whole Foods, then they're able to get in several, throughout the Chicago area. And Kimmy Cakes, Kim Mace's cheesecake company, is an example of that. She got into Inglewood. Now she's in nine Chicago area Whole Foods and continues to grow.
See, I think that's such an interesting system there for Whole Foods because of that, their attention, kind of devotion to putting local products in their stores, and how quickly you can see that jump to citywide, to regional, to national even. I think that's really, really a really interesting part of Whole Foods. So this acquisition, though, this whole Amazon deal,
yes,
what is that going to mean for these local kind of vendors who are working with Whole Foods, if anything?
I think time will tell. I mean, there's so many questions around this. Yeah, when this news broke yesterday, just an absolute stunner in the industry. I mean, I think, there may have been some kind of marginal speculation that Amazon was in it to buy Whole Foods. It's certainly been no secret that Whole Foods has been struggling and, falling same store sales for the past seven quarters. Recently, the JANA Partners activist investors took a stake. So there was certainly a lot of chatter about the likelihood of Whole Foods selling. But yeah, this was a stunner, and so we'll see what it means. Since Dominick's went out of business in the Chicago area in 2014, Whole Foods has been one of the grocery chains that has really benefited and grown in the Chicago area. They have 26 stores in the Chicago area, 12 in the city itself. They weren't saying yesterday, they weren't giving local interviews about local impact. And so, we'll see. I mean, it would seem that, they're going to have more capital to grow now. But what does it mean for shoppers? We'll find out. I think there's a lot of analyst speculation that now Whole Foods is going to be able to leverage some of that Amazon technology. So, maybe you order your Whole Foods groceries and you go pick it up in an Amazon locker there in the store.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like that.
I think it'll be really interesting to see. I also think it's interesting that announcement came right on the edge, the heels there of Jeff Bezos tweeting about he wanted ideas for philanthropic sort of ventures. And that kind of two things that hit back to back, it was so interesting. So to me, that just says capital, capital, capital.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of really interesting pieces timing-wise to this. Yeah, that is interesting. Whole Foods is certainly a company that's, presented itself and taken pride as a philanthropic type of company. And so that's certainly a part of what they do. It's going to be fascinating. I think one, just in terms of local impact, something to keep an eye on. Two is Whole Foods recently, the last couple of years, really just last year or so, started these 365 stores, which are smaller and supposed to be cheaper, smaller footprint stores. They're almost more like a Trader Joe's, where you just have like kind of bags of store branded products and cheaper. And so the idea for Whole Foods was that this will allow us to, serve different demographics and get into kind of smaller footprint stores. Well, they're supposed to open one in Evergreen Park in the new shopping plaza that's opening soon. And that 365 store was supposed to open in November. And I think it's pretty safe to say it's likely that that's at least going to be delayed. But I'm curious to see whether Whole Foods will continue with the 365 concept in general under the Amazon ownership.
Right, right. That will be interesting. Well, we will keep turning to you as the story continues to unfold so we can look at impact of this Whole Foods and Amazon deal. Thank you so much, Greg Trotter, for being with us today. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, likewise. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much. All right, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for being with us today and sharing part of your weekend with us. Very grateful to you for that, as ever. Still lots to do on the program today. We're joined by Abba Badarai, who is a business reporter at Washington Post. Welcome back to the program, Abba.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us again. I appreciate you taking time out of your weekend. Well, right before the news, we were talking a little bit about the local impact or potential local impact anyway of this very, very big deal with Whole Foods and Amazon. But let's back way, way up and talk more about it, because it seems like this is something that caught a lot of people off guard, and it's a very, very large, large deal. So suddenly I feel like the internet exploded with conversation about it when this deal was announced. So let's back up and take us through all the steps of this and all the big pieces.
So you're absolutely right. This came out of left field, and it surprised everybody in the industry as well as consumers across the country. And I think what's so important about this deal is that until now, we've had retailers sort of battling it out on two different courses. You had the traditional retailers like Walmart with their physical stores, and then you had sort of the Amazon of the world, which was concentrated mostly online. And actually last year, Amazon made up one third of all U.S. internet sales. So they were by far the market leader there. And so these, you know, we've had the traditional retailers and then the online retailers kind of going their own way, kind of veering into the other's territory. But this move would signal a huge sort of erasing of the line between those two categories, because once Amazon, if the deal goes through, once it takes over Whole Foods, it would have about 500 stores throughout the country for it to begin testing all of its new technology, and that could really shake up where the grocery industry goes.
I think that's the first thing people started thinking about and speculating about, is what that technology will mean for Whole Foods. And I think there's lots of jokes about, you know, getting lettuce delivered by drone and things like that, which who knows, maybe. Right. But I put that right into capital, because it came on the heels of Jeff Bezos tweeting about, you know, he went to Twitter to say, hey, what are some ideas that you have for a philanthropic effort, which I thought was just really interesting timing.
It was very interesting timing. And I'm not sure if that was intentional. I mean, Amazon has remained very tight-lipped. You know, they put out the release yesterday, but they're not commenting beyond that. So we really don't know what they have in the works and what their big sort of strategy is with Whole Foods. What is interesting, though, is that Amazon is already testing out sort of cashier-less stores and obviously delivery by drone, robots, the whole works. And so we could see any number of those things start to trickle into Whole Foods stores. And also on a more basic level, as soon as the acquisition is completed, every Whole Foods store in the country would essentially be a distribution center for Amazon. So it could mean that your one-day deliveries get to your house even quicker than that.
Oh, that is very interesting. I hadn't considered that part yet at all. Well, and so this also comes on, I think, for a long time. This kind of comes on the heels of like a lot of long speculation about, you know, Whole Foods kind of struggling a little bit financially, not in all markets, but certainly in some of them. It seemed like there was some unsteadiness there. I have to imagine this is largely about funding and helping to kind of level that and steady that business. But I think that's an interesting aspect to also consider, of what the benefit would be to Amazon for, you know, just as you said, like having things delivered to Whole Foods stores.
Exactly. And that's something that we've seen Walmart thinking about a lot as well, because they have this fleet of thousands of stores throughout the country. And so they've sort of gotten in on the business where you can pick up your online orders at the store for a discount. And they're finding ways to sort of utilize those retail spaces and make life even more convenient for people who are shopping online. So I think Amazon is maybe eyeing a few of those things as well.
And so do we think that, I mean, what's the sense that you get anyway from why Whole Foods was struggling so much? Because it seems like, you know, it's a fairly, you know, luxury grocery brand. A lot of people use it. They're always quite crowded. You know, is that partly competition from things like Amazon Prime and those sort of things? Or is there something else more like in the kind of just price war race to the bottom almost for pricing of local grocery chains?
It's all of the above. They are being hit every step of the way. I mean, we've seen stores like Walmart, again, bring in a lot more organic produce, sort of beef up their natural offerings to compete with Whole Foods. And we've also seen a number of other, like, regional supermarkets really pick up around the country, stores like Wegmans. And we're seeing German companies come into the market as well, such as Aldi's and Lidl, which just opened up this week. And so they're known as, you know, big time discount grocers. And so that's sort of dealing a double whammy to Whole Foods as well, which has always sort of said, well, you can come to us and you'll spend a little bit more money, but it's about that premium experience. You're getting specialty food. And it'll be interesting how that changes once Amazon comes in, because Amazon's approach is the total opposite of that. It's about giving you everything you could possibly want for the lowest price possible.
I thought it was very interesting to see how the stock market reacted to this announcement, because it seems like it really set a lot of grocery-specific brands off on many different courses very quickly.
Yes, it seems like the grocery industry is terrified, and that's something that we've been hearing a lot throughout the industry.
Yeah, I mean, part of that, I'm sure, is just the surprise factor, because so many people were going, wait, I'm sorry, what? You know, a lot of people really seem to be caught off guard. And so what are the next steps, and kind of what's the timeline of this as it pushes forward?
The deal is still waiting on regulatory approvals from a number of different entities, and if that were to go through, the deal is set to close later this year. And everybody I've talked to so far seems to think it's going to sail through. There aren't going to be any sort of antitrust issues, because Amazon and Whole Foods, they're sort of competing in two different areas. There's not a lot of overlap there in terms of specialty groceries right now.
Right. Well, it will be very interesting to see how this starts to manifest. If and when this deal goes through, as you said, it looks very likely that it will. It'll be interesting to see how those two brands merge and use technology. So thank you so much for being with us. We will continue to turn to you for more details as this story does unfold. Abba Badarai, thank you so much. Business reporter at Washington Post.
Thanks a lot.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. You know, we talk about a lot of business, workplace etiquette stuff here on this program, and I have an issue I would like to raise. So, this morning I got up and I had 16 emails in my inbox that I had received early this morning and overnight, and all of them but one, and the one that did not have this, was from esteemed producer Griffin Filipich. But all of them said some variation of, in fact, started with some variation of, I know you're busy, but. And I completely understand that that is said to be polite, that like, hey, I know that you probably have a lot going on and I have to ask you something. But here's the thing. Most of those emails were from people I have never actually met. They were the first contact with people, which I found weird because, you know, how do you know?
And people you haven't met, and what were they asking you, or what were they requesting?
Pitching me ideas for stuff. I mean, I wear so many different hats. People, it was all like a project or a collaboration of some sort.
Okay.
So it was like, hey, I know you're busy with this, but it's like several of them were in fact responding to something I had asked for. Like I had tweeted out, hey, if anybody has this, I would love to hear from you. And in fact, it was sources and things like the collaborators responding. So I'd asked that, like, well, no, if I was too busy, I wouldn't have asked for that. I know, and I know this is like a right. weird minor thing.
It just rubbed you the wrong way.
It did, because there's a couple of factors to it, but one of them is I am very much against this culture of busy in which it is fashionable to say, how are you? Oh, busy, crazy busy. Let's not do that. Let's agree that it's acceptable to have leisure time, to care for ourselves, to work, to rest, to have fun and do as we please a little bit too. You know, I mean, the 888, that let's do that, you know. So it's part of it is that I think that if we're continuing to say, how are you? Oh, I'm crazy busy. And I know you're busy, but then I think we're kind of feeding that beast a little bit.
Yeah, to some, like being busy is a status symbol.
Absolutely,
or
it is.
People play it like that.
It's a glorification of chronic busyness. And I want to help undo that. Here's where I'm stuck. There's no real way to say that without being a big jerk. If you answer that email, no, I'm not busy. Why do you think that I am? Then you're a complete jerk. But if you let it go, at least I overthink ethics all the time. So I feel like if I let it go, I am complicit in it. So then that leaves me with some kind of answer I haven't come up with. So a bunch of emails are going to sit in my inbox until I come up with the way to respond to them. Not that that's the first time that's happened, but all of them like that together made me really see it like, oh, this is hinting at a bigger cultural problem.
Maybe the way to respond is on the radio.
Maybe the way to respond is on the radio.
With a little rant on the radio. Well,
I don't fault anybody. I know it comes from a good place. It's all well-intentioned. I don't fault anybody for that.
No, but it is. I totally know what you mean. There was that advertisement. I'm trying to find it now. There was like a Subway ad in, I think, in New York, but it kind of went viral that described a woman's like day, and it was like super busy, and it was sort of a glorification of that, and you need this product if you're as busy as this woman. I wish I could remember what it was. I'm trying to find it.
I don't know that one.
But it was very much what you're talking about, that thing of like, oh, what a dream to not have any time to yourself.
Right.
And like, I don't know, put too much pressure on yourself. Like,
I think especially for women, like there's sort of a thing that if you take time to just relax, that you're doing something wrong or you're failing as a mom or whatever. I think that pressure's on everyone, but I think it's a little different for women. So I feel like a moral obligation to say something kindly, not to admonish anyone who would say that, because again, I know it's coming from a place of kindness and respectfulness, but I feel like I have a moral obligation to say something in a have you considered this sort of way? And I don't know how to do that. So if someone who wrote me an email overnight is listening, I'm not admonishing you. I appreciate the email. I want the email. It might take me a minute to write you back because I don't know what to say.
Email etiquette is tricky in a lot of different ways. I could see being annoyed by an email like that. I could also easily see writing an email like that. So you just,
we've all done it.
Oh, absolutely. So it's kind of a tough spot. I'm always thinking about my use of exclamation points in my emails.
Yeah.
I think that's a status symbol of its own. Like, if you can send an email without an exclamation point, you're doing pretty well.
Totally agree. I'm trying to be really mindful of those kind of throat-clearing words. You know, just say what it is that you mean. Hey, yeah. I just wanted to write because I was just thinking that. No, say, hey, can you get me a job? Or hey, can you hang out? Or whatever the thing is, you know.
That's
true. Just come and say it. I'm never going to think that's rude.
No, but I have to say I do that sometimes. Depending on who I'm writing an email to, I do feel like I get into that kind of flowery, like, just wanted to check in on this or double back with you on, or wanted to see what you're thinking on. You know, like a lot of very roundabout language in emails.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the only time I really do that is if it's a busy news cycle and I need to get something back from an editor. I'll go, hey, I know the news is off the walls today.
Yeah.
But have you had a chance to look at this? Because I need to do X, Y, and Z with it.
Yeah, sometimes it's just saying what you mean can end up being one of those things. But it is a certain crutch that you use, or I certainly do.
I have a friend that puts a calendar reminder up to alert her to search her email for instances of using "I just," "I know," or wait, "I what is it?"
"I just." That's funny.
"I just." "I wanted to," and there's a third one, I don't remember what it is, because she wants to, because that alert annoys her to death, and so her thought is, if I do this, it will make me break the habit. I don't think it's habit. I think habit puts it on the person. I think it's this bigger socialization thing.
Like, I just wanted to see what you think, when you could just say, what do you think? Or
when you
I
say,
wanted
what
to see
do
what
you
think.
Yeah. When you say, what do you think about this?
Yeah, that's so funny. I should probably do that too.
I feel like so many things can be solved with very straightforward language. But
it's easier to engage in when you feel like you are on the same level, if it's a business email.
Yeah.
If you're on the same level and you're not trying to, I don't know, be extra polite.
Right.
Yeah, that adds a whole different element to that kind of correspondence.
And if you know the person, you know, it's like, hey, I know that you're moving today and you're very busy, but I need you to send me this file. Or, hey, I know that whatever. That's different because, in fact, you do know. But I think the second beat of this is you don't know. If you don't know, why are you saying I know you're busy? Because then it makes me go, what am I putting out in the world that people think I don't even... Because to me, like, I've started looking at busy as a bad word. And so to me, it's like, I know that you can't control your life and your schedule. You are the victim of other things put on your calendar.
Right.
I overthink everything, Griffin. I overthink all the things.
I do sense a little bit of spiraling going on, but it's all... But it's all totally, like, understandable. I get
it. Spiraling.
No, I totally get it, though. And, like, yeah, like, hey, I know you're busy is another, like, it's almost
it's,
like
it's
someone
so
telling
innocuous.
you look tired.
It's I don't get mad. I'm not offended. I just think of, like, it's like a little, it's a little glimpse into a bigger social problem, I think.
Yeah.
That we're all socialized to think and do and be.
It is a new brand of, people love to brag about being busy, which I understand.
Yeah.
And like, it's good to have things going on.
It's better than like, how are you? Well, I have nothing to do. I mean, yeah, you'd feel kind of, I get that, you know, I get that. And I know that I'm like, I'm raising the rage of listeners right now. Cause it's like, what a terrible person to think about something so petty, but I'm just saying, let's find another way. Let's say things a little more directly than this like glorifying busy, then I just wanted to, things like that. And if you don't know, don't say you know.
Mm.
I think that's kind of the other part of it. Like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Because then it feels like you're spying on me.
Yeah.
And I know you're not. Because that would be real boring.
Well, it's the weekend. Let's try to take a step back from being busy.
Griffin's like, you chill like... out.
No, you're good. You're good.
And indeed, Father's Day is almost upon us.
Tomorrow.
And... Indeed. Are you all set with the Father's Day stuff, Griffin?
No comment.
I'm not.
Not quite, but we've got time.
Yeah.
Got a full 12 hours, so we'll be good, I think.
I got to figure out something for my dad. He's a difficult guy to shop for because my dad just goes and gets whatever he needs. You know, he doesn't go like, oh, that's a really neat thing. I would love that. Nope. He'll just go, I saw a thing. I bought it.
Like, he's like very linear. He doesn't like want, you don't know what he might want. Well, yeah, you might be alone in that. People do spend a lot of money on Father's Day. How much do you think?
Oh, gosh. Well, we did this for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And it was billions. It was a stunning amount of money.
Yep.
Oh, I don't know. I bet it's less. I'm sure it's less than Mother's Day. But
still in the billions. We're talking
is it really?
15.5. Up over $1 billion from last year.
All right.
So we like our dads better this year.
Our moms better this year too, didn't we?
That comes out to what I'm seeing. This is from Fox Business. That comes to $135
per dad
on average per person, which is a lot. That's big time.
That's a lot. And so, does it break it down? Does it break down those numbers? Because I know at Mother's Day we were looking at how much of that is jewelry, how much of that is flowers, how much of that is brunch or whatever.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, you got like gift cards, gadgets,
sure,
clothing. Not so much with the flowers.
Oh my God, I would never give my dad clothing.
The most popular gift of choice is getting dad out of the house.
Yeah.
So like an event, an activity.
Sure.
More activity based as opposed to like gifts of flowers, candy, stuff like that.
For sure, I feel like my dad said stuff like that to me before, like, oh, just come for a visit or things like that for his birthday, things like that.
Yeah.
Where's my mom's, like, send me plants?
I'm trying to find the Mother's Day numbers because I do want to put them side by side and really
I feel
find
like
out.
The Mother's Day number was about 200, was a little closer to $200 per person as opposed to, what was it, 125, 135 per person for dads?
Yeah, that's right. 15.5 million total.
15.5 million.
Maybe I can come back with that number.
Did you say million or billion?
Billion.
Billion with billion. A B. It's a ton of cash. That's like almost that That's more than that Whole Foods Amazon sale deal. That's what that is. That was $13.7 billion. So if we put it in perspective like that, for what we spent on Father's Day, that's acquiring Whole Foods with a little bit left over.
You could just buy your dad the Whole Foods Corporation for.
I'll start counting the change in my sofa cushions and see how far I get with that. All right.
Nice gift.
He will love it. We're going to take a little break, back in just a bit on 720 WGN.